Chapter 3. Ulanor, Low Orbit. The overture has begun. A while remains until the main movement begins. Time is the enemy of peace. Peace, the enemy of sanity. I do not need to ponder. I have many lifetimes of sorrows to occupy me. Let us be at the matter, and bring it to swift resolution. But it is not your place any more. That was the disaster. Even before the corruption, we were poor lords. No leader save he alone should be greater than his followers. He must value them more than they value him. Why did we not understand that before? Melter charges turned the airlock door into slag in milliseconds, filling the corridor beyond with vapor and fiery particles. Valifor of the Blood Angels was the first through the breach, molten armorplas flecking his red armor as he pushed through the haze. Bullets whined down the corridor and ricocheted from his warplate while lasbeams seared narrow welts across the ceramite. He lifted his pistol to reply with equal force, only for his finger to remain still. His attackers were not orcs. The volley of fire spewed towards him came from the pistols and rifles of human crew. A shotgun blazed as an armsman opened fire, spattering the Blood Angel's captain with pellets.
"Hold your fire!"
he bellowed, levelling his sword at the five sanguinary guard of his retinue that followed from the assault pod. Another flurry of bullets rattled around him, and he returned his attention to the men in front.
"Stop shooting! In the Emperor's name!"
His words fell on deaf ears. Valifor's auto-senses adjusted as the glare of entry faded, revealing more details of his attackers. They wore patched uniforms, some of them little more than rags held together by crude stitching and maintenance tape. Orc glyphs had been painted onto the fabric, and the crew members wore necklaces of human teeth. Their cheeks and brows bore scars and other tribal markings.
"Cleanse the traitors!"
spat the captain, opening fire. His shots cut through the nearest trio, spattering the bulkheads with their blood. More bolts flared past as the sanguinary guard unleashed the Angelus bolters, turning another dozen foes to broken flesh. Valifor launched himself into the remaining crew, his power sword a golden shaft of light in his fist. He parted limbs and bodies with every slash and thrust, the continuing storm of fire from his companions tearing around him. In a few more seconds, they had reached an arterial corridor, emerging into a fresh conflagration of fire from all directions. On galleries above and through open doors, the crew of a boarded ship spilled forth like ants from their nest. Their calls were more like the grunting of animals, low and hoarse. The walls were clumsily painted with more orc glyph marks, and piles of filth littered the deck. Chains and cables, strung with bones and hunks of scrap metal, hung from gallery to gallery in rough ornamentation. The crew was savage, hollering and hooting as they poured along balconies and through the corridors, brandishing their weapons, firing wildly at the interlopers.
"Orcs in human bodies," muttered Sergeant Marbas.
The veteran leveled his wrist-mounted bolter and sent a salvo of shots, slashing through the closest crew.
"This ship was not overrun in these past months of invasion," replied Valifor, adding his own bolts to the furious storm cutting along the corridor from his sanguinary guard. "These wretches have long been under the dominance of the Greenskins."
Marbas growled.
"Did none stand guard for these lost worlds? Did none count their fall? I am sure reports of their loss lie somewhere on the desk of an administratum clerk, unseen beneath tithe receipts and Astra Militarum levy charters," said Valifor. "We cannot be absolved of blame. We are the defenders of humanity. It is our watch that also fell lax." "We cannot be everywhere, Captain. How are we to safeguard a million worlds if they do not call for our aid?"
The crew withdrew a distance, cowed by the firepower of the Space Marines, their las pistols and shotguns of little use against Adeptus Astartes' battleplate, their aim as woeful as the Xenos that dominated them. The savages jeered and screeched, baring their teeth as if they had tusks and fangs like their orc masters. Amongst the raucous cries and shouts, Valifor heard an undercurrent of another sound, a repetitive noise that grew in volume, taking over the disparate bellows and snarls. Through the roar of bolters, snap of lasguns, and the shouts of the wounded and dying, he recognized a single word over and over, a guttural chant in crude, low Gothic.
"Beast! Beast! Beast! Beast!"
The war chant echoed through the ship, accompanied by pounding fists and stamping feet, causing the entire corridor to reverberate.
"They are lost to the Emperor," said Marbas. "They serve another, more immediate power." "There is nothing to be salvaged here," snarled Valifor, withdrawing back into the access way, moving out of the welter of las blasts and projectiles.
The sanguinary guard followed, stepping backwards as they continued their volleys of bolts. A woman emerged from a hatch to their right, barking madly as she threw herself at Valifor, daggers improvised out of plasteel sheets in her fists. She wore daubs of black face paint and a headscarf, checked in black and white, a pattern Valifor had seen on many an orc banner. The tip of his sword found her throat even as she scrambled to her feet, snarling becoming a death rattle as she folded to the deck. Others were pushing through the maintenance shaft after her. Valifor kicked the first back into the tunnel and tossed a frag grenade into the open hatch. He stepped back as the detonation filled the small space with deadly shrapnel, then signaled to his vessel.
"Sanguinum Ignis, we are ceasing the boarding action. When we are clear, turn this ship to plasma."
Thane turned at the sound of the command bridge doors opening. He caught his breath as Vulcan ducked beneath the lintel. Fully armoured, he was as big as a dreadnought, and the battle barge's bridge, though large by human standards, seemed barely able to contain his presence. The chapter master of the Fist's Exemplar stepped to one side as Vulcan took the centre of the chamber. Others turned at their stations, those capable of independent thought did. Thane saw veterans of dozens of battles trembling in the presence of the Emperor's son. Several unaugmented crew muttered invocations and bowed their heads. Thane let out a breath he hadn't realized he had been holding. It was the Primarch's first appearance on the command deck since he had come aboard. His presence lightened Thane's mood, reassuring and strong in equal measure. Corland followed a few steps behind, his expression guarded.
"Welcome to the Alcazar Remembered, Lord Primarch. I am sorry I did not get to extend a greeting on your arrival."
Vulcan said nothing, and eyed the main display.
"A Salamander strike cruiser arrived in system yesterday, my lord," Thane continued. "They requested an audience."
"No,"
Vulcan replied, still examining the scanner feeds.
"They will operate as part of a force without favor. Seeing me will only distract them."
"They will be disappointed."
"That is all,"
the Primarch said, turning to Thane.
"A few battle stations and a handful of warships."
"We can detect no other orbital defenses, Lord Primarch."
Corland stepped forward.
"I have sent Chapter Master Odin Nathus and High Marshal Beaumont to lead the attacks against the orbital platforms. Admiral Villiers and the survivors of the 3rd Corwood Flotilla are clearing out the remaining starships, while Admiral Akaria creates a high orbital blockade."
He took a breath, and his gaze moved between the Primarch and the screen and back again.
"Within 10 hours, we will have full orbital supremacy."
"I see."
Vulcan placed his hands together, palm to palm, resting against his plastron as if in prayer. He did not look pleased.
"Are we to truly believe that we have seized Ullinor, homeworld of the beast that has unleashed untold destruction across the Segmentum Solar within 10 days of arrival and with a loss of only 2 frigates, 1 destroyer, and less than 20 space marines?"
"That is the situation at present, Lord Primarch," said Thane.
Vulcan accepted this in silence, looking at Corland expectantly. The Lord Commander ground his teeth in thought for a short time.
"We cannot dispute the facts as they are," he said slowly, considering his words. "Orbital dominance is assured, and the Orc fleet is scattered. The Imperial Navy is capable of creating an outer blockade against any counterattack. The next phase must be surface assault. We need a war council to decide the strategy and plan of attack."
"Very well," Vulcan said with a nod. "By my authority, make it so."
The Primarch left, and with his departure the bridge regained something of its old dimensions, the background mood losing some of its intensity. Thane approached Corland.
"Why does he not issue the command himself?" the exemplar asked. "He seems disinterested in the entire endeavour."
Corland laid a hand on Thane's pauldron.
"He is a Primarch, a son of the Emperor. I do not try to guess his thoughts, but I have no doubt of his motivations. He has brought us here to kill the great beast, and that is what we shall do."
"Then I will share your confidence, brother," said Thane.
"Who shall we bring to the War Council?"
"All of them," replied the Lord Commander. "Chapter masters and command-level captains, admirals and commodores, and don't forget Dominus Gerg Zokov, and whichever subordinates he wishes to bring."
"And what is to be the strategy, brother?"
"We find the great beast, attack with everything we have, and destroy it."
The words were simple enough, but the look Corland exchanged with Thane confirmed the exemplar's belief that the execution, literal and figurative, would be far from straightforward. The Lex Mechanic's voice box had an irritating static interference that made her sibilance sound like a hissing snake. Corland tried to ignore the aural tick so that he could concentrate on the tech priest's analysis. She was currently pointing with a reticulated mechanical limb at a greyish globe dominating the hololith display that hung in the middle of the briefing chamber. The room was dark, illuminated only by the sparse light coming from the projector. The gloom did nothing to alleviate the claustrophobic conditions of a chamber built for half a dozen officers, filled with twice that number and their attendants, not to mention the dominating presence of Vulcan, looming over them all from beside a blinking bank of strategic cogitators. The Primarch had his fingers entwined, his gaze directed off to one side, barely observing the proceedings. Removing the large, brushed steel table had not made much difference, but Corland was glad of the little extra space that this had afforded. He shifted his weight, agitated, aware that many of his companions were barely restraining their desire for more determined conversation, only for the sake of appearances, observing the niceties of the technical reports and standard liaison protocols. Everyone had something to say, but nobody was saying anything yet.
"Electromagnetic disturbance in the upper ionosphere has led to much reflective patterning on our initial orbital scan data."
At an unseen command, areas of the slowly spinning globe highlighted in orange with trails of yellow crisscrossing sections of the remaining whited-out sphere.
"Much of this interference can be traced to massive orbital intrusions. The rest, we expect, is generated by unshielded industrial structures on the surface of the planet."
"Orbital intrusions?"
The question was asked by Field Legatus Otto Dorr, strategic commander of the gathered Astromilitarum forces. In terms of raw manpower, when the remainder of the transports completed the journey into orbit, he would lead the largest force, nearly 90,000 soldiers and 10,000 battle tanks and other vehicles.
"Ship descents and ascents,"
explained another of the cult mechanicus adherents. He looked much like a crab perched on a hunched human body, a splay of hydraulic appendages like a ruff around his neck.
"Poorly shielded plasma drives in low orbit wakes from dirty atomic propellants on shuttlecraft. That sort of thing."
"A lot of them,"
added the Dominus. Corland knew that it was crude to think of martial prowess in purely physical terms. In fact, to equate pure size with military ability was orc thought. Yet despite being logically aware of this deficiency in his judgment, he could not help but think of the leader of the Adeptus Mechanicus battle congregation as being somewhat underwhelming. The Dominus was, for the moment, a brain in a glass vessel. An armoured vessel, Corland conceded, as Gerg Zokov continued his detailed explanation of the vacillations and weaknesses of starship augur arrays. Clusters of sensory nodes and rods were mechanical replacements for eyes, nose, ears and skin, linked through spiralling cables attached to sockets in the exterior of the metre-high vessel that two lumbering natal tank Praetorians had brought to the council room. The biotic fluid inside obscured all but the dark shadow of the organ within, but occasionally Corin could see there were rods penetrating the naked brain matter. The brain itself was distended, patched in places with inorganic plates, far larger than any normal human skull could contain. Most disconcerting was that the Dominus's voice actually came from the young, waxen-faced man beside the stand on which the technopic vessel was set. By some invisible pathway, Ger Gzokov controlled the slack-faced servitor's body, at least the jaw and vocal cords, for all other facial functions seemed inoperative.
"Can you find it?" Beaumont's growl cut across the Dominus's lecture. "Where is the great beast of Ulanor?" "We have identified several potential locations, hotspots of multi-frequency activity."
There was a pause while Zokov's attendants manipulated the display, which flickered with runic lingua technis inscriptions over several broad zones of red.
"Each of those must be several thousand square kilometers," said Wolflord Asger, "and there are four of them. That's a quarter of the planet's surface." "We need to do better," Corlin spoke, sensing growing unease between the Space Marines and Adeptus Mechanicus representatives. "We cannot attack the entire world. We are here to kill the great beast, not conquer Ulanor. That is a war for another time. Terra itself is threatened. Time is a luxury."
His announcement was met with silence for several seconds. Adnakil, a company master from the Dark Angels, spoke next. He pulled back the cowl of his robe and revealed a deeply lined face, grey hair cropped. Red light glittered in one eye, the lifelike orb hiding a bionic within.
"As nobody else seems willing to raise the point, let me ask the question that is doubtless on all of our minds."
As he spoke, he looked at Vulcan, but his gaze moved to Corland when he received no response from the Primarch.
"Why is Ulanor so poorly defended?"
The obvious answer went unspoken for a few seconds before Beaumont offered an alternative.
"We have seen little strategy in the Orcs' movements."
He shifted his weight, his black armor reflecting the yellow and green lights from the hololith projector.
"Orcs do not consider grander plans. They simply attack until victorious or defeated. I am not surprised that there has been no thought given to the defense of their world."
"That might be true," said Asger. "But for the recent example of the attack moon, I have seen the reports. The Orcs on the station above Terra lured in the assault, feigning weakness before striking. Had that attack been led by experienced commanders, they would have foreseen the danger," said Beaumont.
"And here we are," replied Asger.
"So, it's a trap," said Thane. He looked at the assembled officers and commanders, hoping one might offer an alternative. None of them argued, not even Beaumont.
"A trap we cannot avoid," said Corland, his expression sour. "Perhaps that is the intent. We cannot destroy the great beast without landing forces. If we are not here to kill it, we should simply return to Terra and reconsider our options."
"There will be no withdrawal," growled Vulcan.
He moved into the light of the hololith, filling the room, drawing all eyes.
"The great beast dies, or we do. This is how it will be. This is how it should be."
"What do you mean, Lord Vulcan?" asked Zokov. "Pointless expenditure of resources must be avoided. What is to be attained by placing ourselves between the jaws of the enemy if we have no guarantee of success?"
"You wage war with formulae and calculations, Magos Dominus," said Vulcan.
He narrowed his eyes and then looked away.
"The balance of expense versus gain, parsed through algorithms and logic engines. All is rendered into probability. I must ask you to go further, to have faith."
"My lord!"
Beaumont was conflicted, his expression vacillating between confusion and eagerness.
"Faith in what, Lord Vulcan?"
"Ourselves, perhaps," the Primarch replied. "In justice, in vengeance if need be. If that does not suffice, then you must have faith in me. We can do nothing more than strive for victory, even if we cannot see how we might triumph. Magos, do not take this as insult, but there are matters that exist beyond the predictable and physical. The hearts of warriors and the chances of war are not easily codified.
I have never claimed as such, Lord Primarch, Zokov protested. My successes have been built upon adaptation and reaction, the ability to respond to the unknowable when it becomes known.
Then we shall have faith in the Adeptus Mechanicus also, Vulcan replied with a placating smile.
Faith will not bring forth the great beast, Zokov argued through his vox servitor. Application and endeavor will locate the target.
As you say, Magos Dominus, as you say, Vulcan conceded.
He looked at Corland, expecting the Lord Commander to continue.
Application and endeavor, echoed Corland. We cannot avoid a planet strike, so we must expend no concern on that front. There is one goal alone that must drive us, to locate the great beast. When that is achieved, we will bring such force to bear that whatever the orcs think they might do, it shall pale in comparison to our fury.
There were words and gestures of assent from the gathered council. When the others had dispersed, Thane and Corland were left with Vulcan. The Primarch had withdrawn into himself again and stared silently at the slowly revolving hololith of Ulanor.
You look troubled, my lord, said Thane.
Vulcan did not move his gaze, but replied softly,
Rivers follow their course. Animals follow their runs. Events follow required patterns.
He sighed.
Certain confrontations are inevitable. Unavoidable consequences were set in motion the moment we chose to come to Ulanor.
What consequences, my lord? Asked Corland.
None that we can evade, Corland, said the Primarch. But we must prevail, or all is lost. As I said, we must all show a little faith.
Following the disappointing council, Corland sought to find a little time for reflection before returning to the command bridge and the demands of his rank. Ever since he had taken up the mantle of Lord Commander, it had seemed that vexation had become his constant companion. He walked the corridors and decks of the Alcazar Remembered, but despite recent familiarity with the battle barge, it felt alien and unwelcoming. It was a ship of the Fist's Exemplar, the domain of Thane. As welcome as Corland had been made, as much as he shared gene seed with Thane and his battle brothers, it was still foreign to an Imperial Fist. His unthinking route took him away from the main decks and up towards the navigation suite where the members of the Navis Nobilitae were quartered. He did not disturb the navigators, but turned towards the observation deck after their chambers. From the long starboard gallery of the armor glass windows, he could see Ulanor, past jutting gun batteries below the edge of a purple-grey hemisphere. He looked at the planet for some time, no single thought coalescing, his mind moving from one concern to the next without even seeking solution, simply cataloguing the obstacles that seemed to have amassed in his path. The thud of a heavy tread caused him to turn, expecting to see a maintenance servitor or other menial. Instead, he met the concerned gaze of Maximus Thane.
I apologize for the disturbance, Lord Commander, said the chapter master. The fleet commanders and our battle brothers have been requesting instruction. Did you learn anything more of use from the Lord Primarch?
Corland shook his head.
We have not spoken further. It is clear he wishes me to fulfill the role of Lord Commander. The title is not for decoration alone, even with his return.
I have issued standard protocols in your name, Thane said, stopping alongside the Lord Commander. Straightforward requests for data, obvious fleet maneuvers to allow the Adeptus Mechanicus to conduct survey flights. Beaumont and his Black Templars are assuming an aggressive orbital stance. It seems he is volunteering to be the spearhead of an assault.
Of course he is, murmured Corland.
He waved a hand towards Ulanor and raised his voice.
Against what foe should we cast the spear, Maximus? Would Beaumont have us strike without sight? If only I had the eyes to pierce the gloom that shrouds this world.
He turned away from the view and addressed Thane directly.
What matter do you need to raise?
Something I think you need to know, though I cannot say if it is important or not. Events at Vandis that have been overlooked. The last transmission of Magnaric, it has been gnawing at me. He was willing to risk everything to ensure it was safely conducted to Terra, but the ships had not arrived before our departure. Information so vital an honored veteran of the Heresy War was prepared to make common cause with accursed traitors.
There is nothing I can do about that, brother, Corin sighed. I cannot reach out my hand and pluck the missing ships from the warp, nor pull free from them the information in an encrypted data packet.
It is an unfinished business, Thane said slowly, choosing his words carefully, finding it difficult to explain his thoughts.
And Zerbrin did not return, even though we know that the Dantalion survived the battle. It is most uncharacteristic that he did not come to Terra immediately.
Our astropaths and librarians sought for any sign of their approach before we departed, but saw nothing.
It is possible that both Zerbrin and others arrived after...
The Lord Commander straightened, struck by a thought. He glanced at the planet below and then back to Thane.
Perhaps we do have eyes to pierce this veil, Maximus.
For the first time in many, many days, Courland smiled. Maximus Thane had never previously ventured into this part of the Alcazar Remembered. There had been no reason to intrude upon the private chambers set aside for the Librarius of the Fist's Exemplar. It was with a brief moment of trepidation that he paused at the threshold to the deck, one hand on the bulkhead, the other on the pistol grip at his hip, as though expecting attack.
"Is there something wrong, brother?"
Chapter Master Odenathus asked from behind. Thane did not look back, but knew the eyes of his companions were on him. Corland, Adnakiel, Asgar Warfist, Cassadra, and Issachar. In other circumstances, it would be unthinkable for such a group of officers to be absent from their commands while in orbit over an enemy world, but the orcs had shown no more intent to attack than when the fleet had first broken warp. The Imperial Navy were more than capable of fending off the disjointed assaults by individual orc battleships and opportunistic flotillas. Saying nothing, Thane stepped through into the Librarius deck, expecting to see some change in the atmosphere or mood. Aside from his own tension, there was nothing. He looked at the wards cast into the fabric of the walls and bulkheads, psychic shielding runes wrought as much to keep out unwanted attention as they were to contain the power of the librarians gathered within. Should the Geller fields fail in warp transit, itself a numbing proposition, the inner wards provided a sanctum within the ship from which psychic resistance might be staged. At the heart of the deck was an amphitheatre, the Hall of Solace. The dome above it was formed of petal-like segments, lined with crystalline channels and veins, the seemingly haphazard array of blue and grey lines having a mesmerising quality when Thane looked up at them. The Hall of Solace was usually a place of solitude and calm, but today it served a different purpose. Nearly a score of Space Marine psychers, in many colours and of varying rank, had gathered aboard the Alcazar Remembered in the 10 hours since the War Council. Some he had met before, such as Rune Priest Thorild from Asgar Warfist's Great Company and Lexicanum Gandorin of the Dark Angels, as well as several from the Imperial Fist successors that had gathered at Fahl. Others, the gaunt-faced Blood Angel, Redolfio and Carrigan Norse of the Crimson Fists among them, were known to him only by name. Thane glanced at Corland and received a nod of assurance from the Lord Commander. Neither had remarked on the absence of Vulcan. The Primarch was keeping his own counsel for the time being, and that suited Thane. As much as the presence of the Lord of the Salamanders gave him heart, Thane was also slightly disturbed by Vulcan's occasionally fatalistic utterances.
"Shall we begin?" asked Vaniel, the chief librarian of the Ultramarines, who had been tasked with orchestrating the psychers. "Why are we here?" said Cassadra.
With the others, he sat on a curved bench close to one of the walls, looking down into the bowl of the Hall of Solace.
"As witnesses," Vaniel replied, "my brother librarians and I shall be in communion with each other, and I shall be the conduit.
To break through the fog of orc psychic power that envelops Ulanor, we shall all need to enter a trance-like state. It is possible we will not remember that which we encounter.
Bow, we will not touch on your minds directly, added Redolfio. You are all warriors with strong will. Your mere presence in this place will act as a shield against disturbances and intrusions. Allow us to focus our efforts on silencing the orc psychic roar.
Very well. What do you require of us? Said Corland.
Nothing more than your attention and your patience, Lord Commander, said Vaniel.
He turned back to his companions, standing within the lines of a hexagramic star laid into the deck with lines of lead, the cardinal points and intersections marked by jutting pillars of metal like candlesticks. Vaniel stood at the center. Pauldrons scraped against each other as the rest of the librarians came together in a circle around him, the space intended for half their number. The librarians bowed their heads. An aura of light filled the air around them, glowing from the nest of cables that splayed from the neck openings of their armor and pierced each of their heads, psychic hoods that amplified their powers. Thane realized he was holding his breath. He let it out slowly, not wishing to betray his sensitivity. His exhalation came as a faint mist. The hall had dropped several degrees in temperature, a thin rime of frost glittered at the hexagramic nodes on the floor. The other officers were intent on the unfolding scene below and did not spare him a glance. Silence descended. The only sounds, those of the ship around them, which quickly faded from thought. The gleam and glitter of psychic energy were made more sinister by the lack of accompanying noise. No word was spoken by the librarians, but Thane had a sense of conversation, of the connection between them growing, unseen and unheard. He listened to the whisper of their breaths, realizing that they were coming together, every inhalation and exhalation moving into time with the others. Thane leaned forward, intent. His eyes swept from one librarian to the next, seeking any sign of strain. If anything, the psychers looked at peace. Eyes closed, faces relaxed. He could see Vaniel only in profile, but the chief librarian's face was slightly uplifted, as though a heavenly body above drew his unseen gaze. His eyes moved back and forth under the lids, as if reading. Anger. The word was muttered, barely audible as it left Vaniel's lips, but it made Thane twitch in surprise.
Immortal anger. Rage. A tempest.
Daniel's mouth barely moved, but the words grew in volume, amplified by the chamber, settling in Thane's thoughts more loudly than the librarian's voice alone. A darkness passed over Daniel's face, like the shadow of a cloud. Thane blinked. He looked up, and the channels of psychic crystal in the dome glowed with a consistent pale blue light. The lumen strips in the walls were equally constant.
A storm of wrath, a storm of fury.
Thane felt it, felt the anger that lapped at the minds of the librarians like a tide breaking against a seawall. The others sensed it too. They shifted in unease, their movement in the corner of his eye, but his attention fixated upon the psychers. He saw the shadow again, darker, lingering longer on the face of Vaniel. Thane wanted to speak out, but knew that any disturbance not only threatened failure in the ritual, but might compromise the psychers' defences. A scrape just beside him drew his glance for just a moment. Gauntleted fingers drew back along the bench, leaving ragged marks. Thane realized it was his own hand. His jaw was clamped tight, aching. It was not just Thane and his distaste for psychers. A noticeable tension permeated the chamber, emanating from the circle of librarians. The Space Marine officers observing the ritual all felt what Vaniel felt, sensing the savagery of the orcs, as well as hearing his thoughts in their minds. A brutal urgency was pushing into Thane, quickening his hearts.
Straining! Raging! Thrashing!
Vaniel rasped. His voice was becoming more guttural, his demeanor darkened. He bared his teeth, heavy gasps punctuating his snarled words.
The Great Green powers us! The Great Green becomes us! We are the Great Green.
The grunts and groans were not limited to the Ultramarine's chief librarian. The other psychers channeled the primal spirit of the orcs, their faces, masks of bestial hate, hands forming claws or fists. Redolfio was banging the heels of his hands against his chest, each impact sending a jolt of energy through the others. Thane noticed that the blood angel's incisors seemed long, fang-like. He tore his eyes away for just long enough to steal a glance towards Valafor. The blood angel's captain was alert, leaning forwards on the bench. A growl, long and low, reverberated around the dome. Though he could not say how he knew, Thane felt it emitted from the rune priest, Thorild. The Fenrisian's eyes were wide open, glowing red like embers. His beard and hair moved as though in their own breeze. The pulses of energy playing around the assembled librarian's psychic hoods was tainted by green sparks.
"The city," croaked Vaniel.
His gaze moved slowly around the room, his body turning with it.
"The Citadel. Gorkagrod. Temple of the Great. Green. A throne of rage. A blade awaits. Cannons lie slumbering."
As one, all of the librarians jerked, straightening suddenly with throaty roars. Thane started in shock, and the clatter and whine of warplate betrayed the reactions of the others.
"The beast arises!"
Vaniel hunched, arms hanging like an ape's limbs, lips drawn back to reveal teeth and gums darkened by psychic power. He threw back his head and lifted his hands high, a wordless howl bursting forth. Several of the others raised their voices in unison, creating a primordial shout that shook the hall physically and psychically. Thorild stepped back, breaking the circle. His entire body was taut, thrumming with tension like the air around him. Ceramite shattered as talons of scarlet lanced from the rune priest's fingertips. Corland drew his pistol and fired, the bolt hitting the space wolf in the back of the left arm, splintering warplate.
"No!"
bellowed Asger, smashing a shoulder into the Lord Commander, sending Corland's next shot into the far wall. Thorild leapt, and in that moment Thane saw what the rune priest had sensed a moment earlier. Vaniel drew his combat blade and pistol in a fluid movement. Roaring incoherently, he attacked, firing bolts into the face of Carrigan Norse of the Crimson Fists, while he drove the point of the knife into the throat of Redolfio. Two other librarians fell onto their companions, battering with fists wreathed in green lightning, shrieking like foul greenskins. The other ultramarine in the circle, Adarian, threw out a hand. A golden gladius appeared in his fist, piercing the chest of one of the orc-maddened psychers. Thoril's claws sheared through the throat of Vaniel, almost severing his head. A detonation of jade energy erupted from the slain chief librarian. The shockwave hurled everyone to the ground with a howling wind and the clatter of armor. It slammed into the walls and dome, where runes burned with a blinding green light for several seconds. Thane felt himself at the center of a storm, his body crushed by a tremendous weight, his thoughts tossed adrift by the psychic tempest. The primal roar flowed into him, through him. He gritted his teeth, resisting the instinct to add his voice to the tumultuous bellow. For an instant, he was but one of countless billions, a single warrior in an immense army that bestrode the stars. His voice was countless voices were his. A single shout, a unifying war cry that drove them all, that fueled and was fueled from the great green sea that swept away all in its path. The pounding of his heart filled his ears. A growl shook Thane, welling up from his throat. He needed his weapons. He needed to fight, to dominate, to destroy.
"I am Maximus Thane," he snarled, the words coming as though dragged from his lips. "Chapter Master of the Fists. Exemplar, Son of Dawn."
This last declaration broke him free from the lure of the savage orc spirit unleashed by the librarians. He recovered his wits to find himself lying face down on the hard floor. He remained there for several heartbeats, steadying his thoughts, before he risked standing. Slowly, he pushed himself up. Corland was already on his feet. He advanced on the dazed psychers, a glance at Asger warning the wolf lord to stay back. Thorild pushed himself away from the bloody wreckage that remained of Vaniel, covered in gore.
His claws had disappeared, and he held up his hands as Corland approached with purpose.
Wait, called Thane. I saw what happened.
Corland stopped. His eyes remained on Thorild.
So did I, brother.
He motioned for Thorild to put down his hands.
I think we owe you a blood debt, brother Rune Priest. Our loss would have been greater today if not for your strength.
The Great Green. The Orc psychic field is phenomenal,
Thorild whispered.
All-consuming. I wanted to embrace it, become it, to unleash the beast inside.
It was not simply the Gestalt Orc presence, said Adarian. The Ultramarine gazed sorrowfully at what remained of his superior. It was focused, as though through a lens, not consciously directed, but amplified.
It reminded me of something, said Gandorin.
He glanced at the surviving psychers, haunted, and received nods of agreement.
But I'm not sure what.
I do not know, said Adarian, but I concur. The great beast, we felt it, just for an instant, an incarnation, a conquering spirit given giant form. All that it is to be an orc made flesh. Nearly overwhelming.
But you resisted, said Thane, regaining his feet.
He looked at the others that had countered the orc insurgents. You fought back.
It met something more savage,
Thorild growled. He tapped his chest.
Something in here it wasn't expecting. A little gift of my Fenrisian heritage. I followed your call, said Gandorin, a brief smile. Your howl was louder. What of the city?
The question came from Odenathus. The others had descended to the floor of the hall and waited just behind Thane and Corland.
Gokagrod, said Adarian. We all saw it, a towering edifice dedicated to the essence of Orcdom. The great beast is there, I am certain.
Where? Asked Corland. Where is this Gokagrod?
I cannot say, said Adarian. The other psychers shook their heads and frowned.
Which part of the sun blinds you when you look upon it? Explained Gandorin. The assault was both like a lens and diffused. We have learnt nothing in return for the losses we have suffered.
This somber news was greeted with silence. Thane looked at the librarians who had been slain. Good warriors, taken from the service of the Emperor in the worst circumstance, by the hands of their battle brothers.
We must shut down all psychic activity across the fleet, said Corland. If this was a deliberate counterattack, the orcs may target our navigators, or the Primaris Psychers of the Astra Militarum.
There are means and places for such precautions, said Thorold. Librarius Sanctums, navigator safe chambers. Of course, some might not be willing to go into isolation.
We will not offer them the choice, Corland said quietly.
And the Astropaths, added Odenathus. This close to Alanor, we cannot risk any psychic pollution, even if the orcs do not intend it.
He looked at the corpse of Vaniel and shook his head.
If the will of an Adeptus Astartes chief librarian is not strong enough to resist, perhaps even being soul-bound to the Emperor is no defense against the rage of the great beast.
Thane had not thought it possible for the mood in the hall to get any grimmer, but he discovered he had been wrong. The Cortex Verdana hung like an inverted pyramid in orbit over Alanor. The Adeptus Mechanicus Warforge bristled with weapon turrets and gun decks, but it was the activity in its 8 flight bays that was the focus of attention. The Strategium was abuzz with clattering, chattering servitors, the air thick with sacred incense issuing forth from environmental systems in preparation for the massed launch, touching the air with a mixed scent of oil and perfume. Gerg Zokulf had been installed into his primary motor array, a sprawl of jointed limbs and coiled wires that gave him the freedom to move about the vast Strategium deck via overhead magnetic runners. The hum of his perambulations heralded his arrival at any particular station, prompting the tech priest overseers to sharply deliver their reports without need for request. Bursts of machine-intelligible vox code mixed with lingua technis, the high notes against a background symphony of droning and whirring cogitators, matriculators, and logistographs. The bubble of phagolinear pipes keeping the servitors alive was nearly lost in the hiss of hydraulics from augmented magi and the crackle of static-filled vidscreens awaiting active live feeds from the dropcraft about to descend into Alinor's murky atmosphere.
Where is the Magos Viridi Exactor? I demanded his presence 7 hectosecs ago.
Zokov's voice snapped mechanically from 200 speaker grills across the strategium, momentarily blotting out all noise.
He is en route, revered spear of the Omnisire,
Magos Delthrak replied from a few paces behind the Dominus. Zokov's chief strategos was a bear of a man. His red robes barely contained the mountain of flesh and bionics within. Muscular bulges and angular jutting edges distorted the heavy fabric. The tread of metal-shod feet set the deck plates trembling with every step. 2 finger-thin tentacular mechadendrites whirred out from niches between his shoulders. They gesticulated in agitation.
He has reached the logical limit for useful competence, Dominus. I am unsure what role you foresee him adequately fulfilling. Why even have him brought forth from the data cores of Pavonis Mons?
This is why I am the Dominus and you are the Strategos,
rasped Zokov, his voice emitting from a personal address system mounted into the cradle holding his technopic jar.
I am the barbarian's advocate, mighty son of vengeance. It is my duty to test your theories. You should not take my disagreements personally.
I do not. Your role I accept. We should ever guard against self-replication and self-verification. Your unbridled enthusiasm for your duties, on the other hand...
A piercing siren and flashing amber lights announced the opening of the grand doors of the strategium. Each door weighed several tons, constructed of layered plasteel and adamantium, able to withstand atomic attack and the heaviest melter blasts. Immense engines built within the doors themselves growled into action, sliding open the massive portal. It was rare for them to operate. On this level alone, there were 6 other smaller entryways into the strategium for the regular coming and going of tech priests and menials, not to mention elevators, conveyors, and 2 staircases linking the master deck to the other parts of the immense command core. Against the white lumen glow beyond the doors, a small figure appeared. It stood lopsided on 3 spindly legs, a barrel-shaped body and upper limbs currently hidden in the voluminous folds of a tech priest's robe. A head, or what was left of one, topped the bizarre torso. As the outlandish figure moved into the strategium, light glinted from a single natural eye set into what had once been the man's forehead, surrounded by metal reinforcements, data-gathering spines, and sensor globes. The tech priest stopped. His head rotated left and right several times, and then his focus latched onto the Dominus. He surged closer in a series of unbalanced bursts, skidding to a halt every few strides before propelling himself forward. Stopping a few meters from the overlord of the Cult Mechanicus forces, the tech priest unfolded 2 crane-like arms and dipped bodily in an approximation of a bow.
Magos Dominus, profound apologies for the tardiness of my response.
The tech priest's voice was artificially modulated, the bass intonation strained through mechanical processors.
My navigational banks were uploaded with inaccurate charts of the Cortex Vadana. I had to inquire as to the correct route to the strategium several times. I hope I have not missed anything.
Launch will commence in 2 hectoseconds, Magos Laurentis,
Zokov replied. Quivering metal appendages waved the unstable tech priest aside, and the Dominus zipped to the main command station at the center of the master deck. He settled his carry cradle into a socket where a more able-bodied leader might have placed a command throne. He had no physical need to see the screens and displays. He could monitor all of the feeds directly through digital translation. However, the symbolism of being at the literal center of all the martial activity was not lost on Zokov. If he had possessed a more traditional corporeal incarnation, this was where he would have sat. A gaggle of servitors blurted out the latest status updates, while more of their kind ambled forward and plugged the Dominus's thicket of external interface attachments into the sockets piercing the command station.
Laurentis and Delphrac arrived just as he settled his systems into the embracing mecha-consciousness of the Cortex Vedana's primary systems. Above him, an atmospheric outlet puffed a mist of pungent sacred incense into the air, responding to his subconscious desire to exhale at length.
Theoton Laurentis, one of only two witnesses to survive the denouement of the Adamantua attack, the Dominus said to Delphrac, turning a sapphire lens towards the tech priest, in answer to his strategios' earlier complaint.
Aside from the personal experience, Magos Laurentis is also a repository for all of the data related to encounters with the Veridi Giganticus since the Adamantua attack. I understand that your lack of induction through the Magi Militarum might impair your ability to understand some of my thinking, but in this case I would think my reasoning requires no justification.
He is dysfunctional, of dubious sanity, Dominus, said Delphrac.
He glared at Phaeton.
Unreliable.
Thank you,
said Laurentis, taking no affront from his superior's discussion in his presence.
I have come to the conclusion that reliability is an overemphasized trait. The unreliable orcs appear to be doing very well thus far, to the extent that the Omnissiah might learn much from them.
He also blasphemes, Delphrac added. He was almost disassembled, a blatant Neo-Vagrus apostate, a corrupting influence.
The Magos' unorthodoxy is one of his greatest strengths. He is irretrievably broken, but his insights into the waywardness of the Veridi Giganticus behavioral model are essential integrational material. Have you not assimilated his recent treatise on the notional benefits of wrongness?
One of my most radical tracts.
A grating sound which might have been a chuckle vibrated through Laurentius's speaker.
Also my shortest. I shall perform a through-check study to see if there is a correlation between brevity and anti-hierarchical asceticism.
The launch commences in 1 hectosecond, announced the Dominus,
cutting off any further response from his strategos. The alert passed through his system without effort, his meta-consciousness overridden by the automaton will of the Cortex Vedana. As Zokuth uttered the words, Banaric Cant Code throbbed from interconsciousness and out through the massive starship, setting off alerts and status demands in a cascade effect. 248 servitors roused from dormancy at his call, secondary monitor systems onlining at his crypto-engrams flowed into their machine bodies. It felt as though he multiplied, becoming a thousandfold incarnation of himself.
All stations on final alert for launch!
Delphrac and Laurentis were arguing about something, but Zokov ignored them, letting their words fall into a temporary memory bank for later review while he focused his will on the final preparations for the scanning mission. Blocky triangles of gunmetal and black, the data gatherers sat on their launch catapults and awaited the last integration protocols for their human pilots. Mostly human. While cortical automata and servitors were useful for many tasks, it was near impossible to replicate human ingenuity and intuition in an artificial spirit. Given the circumstances, a descent into the virtually unknown, looking for an as yet unidentified location, logic alone would not be able to highlight the location of the great beast. While the pilots plugged in their data cables and connected their brains to the machine spirits of their unarmed craft, Zokuth ran a thorough diagnostic of the surveyor assimilation systems. 12 independent data streams coalesced within the analytic framework, and the Dominus did not want to leave any possibility of information corruption or misflow. The response from the orcs was, given past experience, likely to be rapid and lethal. The pilots had been briefed as such, the Dominus making an effort to explain to them the value of their potential sacrifice, ensuring they were cognizant both of the honor they received in being assigned to such an important mission and the glory of the Omnissiah that went with them.
2 decaseconds to mission commencement. Final alert, all stations. Propulsion, bring to full orbital stasis for launch.
Energy grids rippled across the Cortex Vedana. To Zokuth, it felt like a sudden rush of blood, as well as he could remember having such a thing, it having been over a century since anything resembling flesh had encased his consciousness. Arrestor engines and stabilizer jets fired,
ensuring the massive starship was in absolute synchronous orbit with the rotation of the world below. Even a few meters out of place could render the octangulated data feed useless, putting off readings by several kilometers or more. Zhukov allowed himself a moment of introspection, 50 milliseconds to be precise. The behemoth weight of the starship was nothing, just a fraction of its mass at the outer edges of Ulinor's gravity well, riding the line between spiraling into the depths and slinging out into deeper orbit. He wondered if birds felt a similar sensation, poised gliding on a volcanic thermal, riding the invisible line between flying and crashing into the fires below. He wondered if birds felt a similar sensation, poised gliding on a volcanic thermal, riding the invisible line between flying and crashing into the fires below. Plasma pulsed through the Dominus's artificial hearts, and electricity flared along wires like blood vessels. Eyes that could scan every range of radiation glared down at Ulinor, vexed by the miasma of atmospheric and artificial fugue.
Clear for launch. Bay doors to vacuum lock. Final status transmissions readied.
He noticed that his subordinates had fallen silent. All eyes in the strategium, capable of moving from their workstations, were turned upon the banks of the main displays, now crackling with dark shadows from the interior of the flight decks.
Mission commence. Vent bays.
Zhukov felt a slight thrill himself. He had wondered if, divorced of normal human hormones, he was still capable of excitement. Apparently he was, though the experience was purely intellectual anticipation rather than instinctive reaction. Air rushed out into the waiting vacuum as the flight deck doors swiftly opened. On some of the screens, a mixture of distant stars and the purple-grey cloud of Ulinor's sphere appeared from the visual feeds. A spike of light and radiation from full-spectrum monitors flared across others. He silently recalled his final personal instructions from Fabricator General Kubik.
Ulinor is their heart world, the key to unlocking the secrets of the Orc gravitic teleporters. Secure that knowledge for the Cult Mechanicus, and you shall be immortalized as a Tetrarch of Mars, savior of our creed. Whatever happens, we must ensure the survival and future of Mars.
Blessings of the Omnisire upon your data cores, Zhukov announced, letting forth the launch transmission codes. Unto the void, unto the unknown, the hopes of sacred Mars upon your shoulders.
The launch catapults flared, hurling the recon craft into the darkness. Zhukov felt their expulsion as a ripple across non-existent skin, perhaps like a scorpupine ejecting its poisonous spines at a predator. The blunt-nosed ships curved out and down from the Cortex Vadana, the momentum of their ejection taking them away while the gravity of the world pulled them down into meticulously calculated entry patterns. All were silent across Zhukov's systems for nearly a whole second. The engines of the datacraft flared, and they surged towards the planet in a dispersing cluster of sparks against the grey of Ulinor.